Class is now starting. All attendees are in listen-only mode.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to, well, I don't even know which one this is. I'm sure, though, that Michael will provide me with the number. We're working on finding a way to be that which we always talk about. We all know that that words on the mental plane are important, and that we can make a whole world out of the manipulation of words. But then, of course, there comes something beyond excuse me, words. It's called it's an atmic thing, and it's called realization. And then when realization comes, we're grateful for the words that pointed to it. But we know that there is a very great difference between what is a word and what is the real something. Now, I think many people are worried about their life. I've certainly, in my short incarnation here, been worried about whether I'm doing the right thing or the wrong thing. And sometimes it's obvious one way or another. But just suppose, you know, you really knew not only that you live forever, which is interesting, you know, because you might say, well, it starts now and I live forever. Okay. Some of the, you know, the whole question about where was the soul before this particular life is a question that maybe Christian groups and Islamic groups have trouble answering. But, you know, there's a sense of really having been alive forever. And what do I mean by alive? I mean present as part of the, not only part of the great presence, which doesn't have a cause, it's just always been, and not only part of it, but ultimately the whole of it. Of course, this flies right in the face of our usual sense of time and timing. And we understand that time and space are absolutely necessary to deal with. You know, we have our clocks and our schedules and our, you know, need to be here or there, that space, at a certain time in order to carry on what we must do in our daily incarnational life. But then we also have the something deeper, which would be nice to realize. It's kind of a trans time realization, going beyond time, going beyond space. You see, as long as there's no division, no parts and pieces in real being, there just isn't any time and space. You need division to have the sense, the illusory but necessary sense of time and space. I realize, you know, that I'm talking a lot of philosophy to you. I think I do love wisdom somehow, you know, that's what philosophy means, philos, Sophia, the love of wisdom or the love of the light. And meanwhile, there's a lot to learn from the Tibetan. Just imagine what he has in store for his students coming up. He carefully said, around the year 2025. He didn't want to have anybody waiting with their pen in their hand at the stroke of midnight, 2025, you know. So he's being a little bit loose about exactly when it all begins. But bridging treatise number 3 is on its way. And if you do your best to learn what he's had to say in treatise number 2, you're going to be ready, better ready for the treatises that he will give out in number 3. You'll be in a better position to understand, and not just understand words, but really be part of that which stands under the words, the understanding. And you'll just use your astrological qualities and your ray qualities to the best of your ability in that attempt. I realize, you know, in a way, there's so much going on in the world, and it's just so petty, personal, limited, you know, in addition to all the wonderful things, you know, of the people who do see, there's so many things to correct that you might kind of wonder, well, why are we concentrating on these things? And I will just say, they will prove themselves in our attitude toward life, incarnated life. That's what we're all living here, incarnated life. And if we can adopt a really correct attitude to incarnated life, no matter how we get there, then our discipleship, our pledges, you know, we have to become a pledged disciple and an initiate and a pledged initiate and a higher initiate. We have to become all those things. They will work better. So eventually we're going to discover that what Master DK has given us is, and continues to give us, is a huge treasure worth so much more than customary things. Well, you know, sometimes the field is so big, I wonder what to do, but I have a little meditation for us here. And I just want to say, I'm happy to see you here. We joke ahead of time, you know, the brave ones return. So hi, Anne and Annette and Antoinette and Brennan and Catherine and Damien and George and Heike and Judy and Karen and Lori, Margot and Mariut and Maribel, Risto, Stephen Renneberg and Stephen Sprung and Tia and Ivenica and Anne Veronica. Very nice to see you here. And Joe and Michael are helping us over here on the right-hand side in case we go astray or I begin one of those pantomimes, which I don't recognize as a pantomime. I just want to deal with presence. for a moment. You know, there's a lot one could say about the Jesuits and their sort of programming of the human mind. What did they say? Give us your child until he's 7 years old and you can have him for the rest of your life, of his life, meaning that you can program a certain way of thinking into a person and they just will never give it up. Well, we're not interested in mind control, not at all. We're interested in controlling our mind, which is a whole different thing than unwillingly being subject to illusions which have been planted in your mind by others. There's a whole area we have to break free from. From DK's perspective, the new schools are coming because the mind is too concrete. The emotions are too unstable and the body is too weak. And the new schools are supposed to help us overcome those three personal liabilities. So I just want you to think just for a moment. You know, I was just born with this thing in my mind. And I used to plague my parents with these thoughts. Just think about the word forever. Forever. Whether it's forever, we might say in the future. You know, it's somewhat artificial to say that, but or forever in the past. Just think about it. Well, you know, for the concrete mind, it's just built in a way that demands a beginning and an end. And it becomes very unstable when you suggest that the whole idea of beginning or end, except for certain concrete, can I call them, processes measured in time, is illusory. There never was a beginning. Think about that. There never was a beginning that was not preceded. Never. And there never will be an end. I mean, there are ends, you know, In Maya, there are beginnings and ends, of course, but there never will be an end that is not succeeded. Preceded, succeeded. You just don't have a stable beginning from which to count, a stable end toward which to reckon. And even, I think it will be one day understood by those who understand what nobody else seems to understand. I was thinking about Nagarjuna, an earlier incarnation of Master K.H. Kutumbi. I was thinking about his student, Aryasangha, the noble community. That's the Tibetan. Thinking about things that it's very difficult to understand. It just leaves the concrete mind in the dust. And they knew something in their heart of hearts about the nature of reality, and it liberated them, you know, because most of what we have to be liberated from is our misconceptions and our desires that lead nowhere. They don't lead to the true goal. They lead astray. It's like following, you know, there, where you have a swamp, a special kind of light appears. It's a kind of, I don't know, gas light or some kind of light that is not reliable. In German, it's called Irrlicht. You know, the light that leads astray. And will-o'-the-wisp, that kind of thing. I mean, you can follow that kind of light, and people do, but it just leads astray. And since we have come from the One, our task is, since we are the One, to return to the One. And we don't want to take a lot of those side adventures. You know, like the old saying, the knight jumped on his horse and rode off in all directions simultaneously. We don't want to go on too many errant quests that are filled with error. I mean, inevitably they will teach us something, but we want to head in the right direction. And that really involves knowing and feeling and realizing who we are. Now look, I don't know how many of you know what as an incarnated being you were doing in your last life, or the life before, or the life before. Maybe yes, maybe no. And in the new esoteric schools, there will be special techniques taught for the recovery of past incarnations, and I suppose especially the significant ones that are contributing to how this particular incarnation is. So we have that to look forward to. But you know, it's forever is a long time. And then away, no time at all. So what were you doing 500 years ago? Because you were definitely in the incarnational process. You may have been in the body, you may have been out of the body, but you were not nothing, except in the sense that we're all no thing. It would still be in the modern era. What were you doing at the time of the Christ when he was in Palestine, you know? Were you in incarnation? Were you there? Were you somewhere else? You know, this unit of consciousness we call the soul. Obviously, you would have looked different. Sometimes they say, look down at your feet, see if you're wearing any shoes, see if you're, what kind of shoes you're wearing. And from there, you can more quickly gather the whole picture. Lately, as in Siberia, the permafrost is melting because of the planetary changes we're passing through. They're discovering very ancient and yet preserved human beings, animals, etc. What were you doing 10,000 years ago? Now, look, I don't really expect anybody who's going to come up with some kind of accurate answer. What were you doing a million years ago when we were making the transition into the Aryan root race number 5, and emerging out of the emphasis upon the Atlantean root race a million years ago? You were present. You existed. Probably your consciousness was more veiled, but you still had some kind of identity. Well, frankly, you know, you're not really going to know, given the limitations of this present consciousness. There was a great battle to the south of the city, it's now called Delhi or New Delhi, and even looks like atomic weapons were used. And it was the great battle of Kurukshetra. There's a wonderful movie, very long, I forget, is the director Brooks or Blake or something like that, hours long, about the two sides of the family that were fighting there. A great battle 4 million years ago. You were on the planet. In probably most of us, in a semi-Atlantean condition of consciousness that was not yet developmentally mental. But yeah, we were there. If not in that locale, then somewhere. And on it goes. Now look, humanity maybe came into individualization 21 million years ago. That's a long time, isn't it? And probably many of us, most of us, were animal man of the period, being ready for a solar angelic implant, like Blavatsky says, becoming a hothouse plant under special cultivation. Or not, because there are some races even now that have not received such an implant and will not until the fifth round. But go back, I mean, that's just the middle of the Lemurian period. Where were you and what were you doing during the first, I don't know, 15, 20 million years of the Lemurian period? And on other globes earlier than that? And obviously, you can see where this is going, if you can stand it. A universe is an isolated and finite presentation of infinity. Let's think about that. The universe is isolated. It's isolated from the others and finite presentation of absolute infinity. No universe, if the sequence is correct in the great breath, no universe is infinite. So universes have their beginnings and their ends. And who knows how far we are in the middle of this one. Are we in the middle? We're in the middle of our solar system. We're in the middle of our planetary logos's planetary expression. But beyond that, we don't know where we are, really. The masters know. We're somewhere in this universal process. And maybe by studying what they call the red shift or the blue shift, we can maybe tell something. But look. If I say to you, where were you in the middle of the previous universe? What were you? What were you? What were you doing? I mean, you were the great presence out of which, and always have been, the great presence out of which that universe derived. And then you also became an emanation, not necessarily that there's a connection between the emanation that you were then and the emanation you are now. There's no real connection or way to do that. But you were there. You. Not with a human look or whatever, all the familiar things, but you, the presence. You, the presence. You were the very substance of that universe. Now think about how long ago that was. We're not used to handling figures like that. We can talk about trillions and quadrillions and quintillions and sextillions and, you know, like that. And they're just a drop in the bucket compared to the time involved, because pretty much what we have found from the theosophical work is that whenever there is a manifestation of something, there's a more or less equal time for the non-manifestation of that same thing. So that takes us far back. So far back that we don't even think in terms of the numbers like that. I used to think that I had made a great find. I was in a modest encyclopedia, and I found the number vigintillion, which, as I recall, was any number there with 63 zeros after it. We don't think in those terms, and it's just a drop in the bucket anyway. And when you compare it to infinity, it is, as usual, the infinitesimal. I'll go back and back, 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 10 universes ago. And you are there. Matter of fact, you're the whole thing. Twenty, 50, 100 universes ago, the time involved, if time were real, dwarfs any reckoning of time that we usually have. But of course, you can't stop because there's no starting point back there. You have to keep going. So I can say to you this outrageous thought: what were you doing a million universes ago? What was going on? What was happening? You were the main thing. You were the universe. Now right there, you know, throw me away and say I'm crazy, but it all adds up. You were the universe, that universe. And you just can keep going, and you'll never find a resting place. Never. And so we assume, you know, that You just always were, one way or another. The real you. Now think about that for just a moment. That you always were. And of course, will be. If we give the great breath credit for being real, and time as a very high illusion. You always were and you always will be, and it does expand the picture, doesn't it? And of course, although your identity will be divided into a lot of different partialities, a lot of different things, you're just one thing anyway. And that's the no thing. And that's forever. And probably what's going to be proven before long is that the no thing, the presence, the absoluteness, it never moves, it has no parts. You're the whole of it, not just a part of it. There's only one identity. It's been going on forever. There's no movement, no real movement. You are life itself. You're the great survivor of all apparent change. Change is unreal because you never change. You are the boundless, immutable principle. And you can't even get. One day I'll pick this up, you know. You'll discover that in a way you can't even linearly move from one universe to the next. I'll deal with that. So nothing moves and there are no parts. And Aristotle, he had a lot to say about that, but he said it simply. He said, infinity is untraversable. It cannot be crossed. So our big job, I mean, if we can kind of get that in our head, that when you're looking at someone else, you're looking at yourself. It's been said often. And, you know, I say the outrageous thing. I say, hey, I'm just as much you as I am me. What? But that is probably very true. You don't like somebody, they do something bad. Well, who did it? And it gets very intimate, you know. It gets very intimate because there's no space, there's no time, and there's no other, and there's no otherness, unless you just want to use otherness as a word that helps you click into some realization. And in the realized, well, you know, take a look at Yogananda. He was an initiate of the fourth degree, and he has these organizations and places and so forth. It's called the Self-Realization Fellowship, whether it's in Los Angeles or Encinitas or wherever it happens to be. He knew something. Self-realization. So when we can look at the other person and say, hey, I'm just as much you as I am me, I am I, we're on our way. Something fills everything. I mean, you know, it's just a way of thinking about it. And that filling is presence, is being, it has nothing to do with the differentiating, quality detecting mind. You can kind of leave your mind at the door when you walk into the room in which being is the major factor. Now, you don't let it be said that I throw out the mind. I, you know, in the world of Maya, in every universe, when emanations are operating, the mind is indispensable. But there is this presence, and you are that presence forever. If I can say it, you are that presence forever. Always have been. So a thought about changing the perception of our identity is in order, even if it's just 5 minutes a day. And don't let it stay just on the level of words. Make sure that factor of divine vision, which is Buddhic, or realization, which is Atmic, make sure you get a little bit of that. And then the world is different. And even though you have to go on in a practical way, which is right to do, using all of our differentiated faculties, you'll know that beneath it all, the no-thing is, being is, the presence is, business is. In the Yoga Sutras, remember the masters themselves read the last two books of those Yoga Sutras by Patanjali. There's one of those slokas or verses, you know, where it says the enlightened man contains the universe within himself. Something like that. Well, that's what we want to do. We want to become that way, so that we, in a way, contain anything whatsoever within ourselves. It's a big stretch. But, you know, when you get onto the higher planes, as the masters do in the spiritual triad and beyond, that ability for containment appears. Now, Master Maurya is always talking about containment. What he means, okay, maybe he means what I'm talking about here. Maybe he means something different. But I think one of the things he means is what I'm talking about. And then, when we look at somebody else, let's just say, I don't just say, hey, I know you. Yes, that's true. And the next step is to say and realize it and mean it, hey, I am you. Now, it sounds like a platitude. It sounds like it's trite. Like it's, you know, anybody says that. But there is a way to actually get into it so that it becomes real to us. That's what we need, the reality of that. And like I say, in the heart and the head, in the egoic lotus, in the monad, which is a heart, and on, in that ladder of heart centers, that's where all of this will be realized. And it should, if we recall it at the right time, alter, lift, transform our normal human attitude toward life, towards misfortune, towards, you know, towards things that aren't going right, and or even towards things that are going right. So it's a life transformer to learn to think in this way, and not only think in this way, but to realize in this way. It boggles the mind. Time four is, you know, I love big numbers. I've always had. I love very much the number, the Google. It's got 100, got 100 zeros after it. A one with 100 zeros, something like that. And then, of course, there's still a bigger one, but I'm going to stay away from it And hey, if I go backwards or forwards, but backwards for the moment, was there a universe, a Google universes ago? Yes. Was I as being, as presence, not you know, my present identity, was I there or was I that? Yes. It's inconceivable, except that, you know, you were there. There used to be a television program, You Are There, or You Were There. It was a long time ago, but it put you right in the midst of enactments that were important in history. So there are some thoughts to think which can change your life. And, you know, I'm still working on it. I'm sure all of us is a work in progress when we start to think this way. I sometimes just slip out of it. I forget everything I know. I go back to the old way of, you know, complaint, whatever. I forget the reality. But then maybe I remember in a little while. And maybe the change happens. And this change is just about endless, of course. And it's been going on forever. Now say, well, why is this? Why does God do this, or et cetera, et cetera? And, you know, one of the things I've come up with is to simply say, if you're going to be absolutely infinite, you have to be finite in all possible ways as well. And we'll never catch up, never catch up. It's just been going on forever, and we'll never catch up. But meanwhile, there's a release in these thoughts. And even though they seem beyond the pale, pale is a fence, they take you into the realm of the abstract mind, which for the next 2,000 years is the focus during the closing part of the Aryan root race. So we have to develop that. And it's kind of fun to see what new thoughts come along and what realizations they may reveal. Okay. So obviously that was half of a lecture and partly a meditation where I'm saying, now think about this, think about this, think about this. And now I'd like to, there's 21 of us here, or maybe 25 or something like that. If any of you has any questions or thoughts, or if you want to run screaming from the room, I can understand. It all happened to me when I met my teacher. And he knew stuff. And I knew he knew. And so I said to myself, well, how did he get to know? And I thought, and I thought, and I thought. And then eventually I ran into things that I've been thinking about for probably millions of years, the Vedanta teaching, or at least thousands. And I developed that way of thinking. Without being afraid of what I might run into. You know, sometimes you meet a person to offer a way of thought, but they're very much entrenched in the way of thought that will save their soul. You know what I mean? Save their soul. So I don't dare think about those things because I might get lost. I might give up the salvation of my soul. I don't dare. See what I mean? Well, for me, I dare because, you know, there's nothing else to lose. Just keep going. And I'm still daring. And I don't know where it all leads. And I just keep going. And I think, you know, you might find that for yourself, in your own way, when you want to expand the mind beyond its ordinariness, there may be something here for you, right? So I heard, Michael, that you were afoot.
I think it was me afoot. I just wanted to point out there are some comments and questions I posted in the chat box for everyone that are from Jay.
Jay. Oh, J-O, J-O, that's Judy. And maybe she's also, is she also in the, I can read better from the questions.
From the chat, I think, or come from the questions. There are three. Yeah, I'm gonna
give it a try.
Good.
Okay, so yeah. Yeah, it's a little easier for me. And hopefully it doesn't block your vision of these seven dimensions. Think that when one reaches, be there is no time and space and forever. Wait a second. So Joe, what do you have there?
No time, space. No time and space and forever has no meaning.
Meaning is interesting. Being is much higher than meaning. Meaning is the place within a design of the parts that constitute that design. When there are no parts, we're beyond meaning. You know, and I'm just beginning to understand, Judy, something here. I used to read a little bit of Nietzsche, nihilistic philosopher, you know, with 29 degrees of Scorpio as his rising sign. You know, the old joke, Nietzsche says, God is dead. Well, he had a reason for saying it, the old God, right? And then along come those who don't quite believe what he said. And instead of God is dead, Nietzsche, we had Nietzsche is dead, God. But he was interesting, and he wrote about beyond good and evil. Well, there is that which is beyond good and evil, because you need division and quality in order to produce good and evil. But when you have absolute infinity and pure being, you have everything. So in a way, it's only in a finite condition, like the universe, that you have good and evil. And when you're involved in allness, then we are beyond it, just like we're beyond meaning. Meaning is very interesting. It's the world of the soul. Meaning is qualitative. Meaning has to do with hierarchy. What is high? What is low? What is the place of a thing? But beyond all that, there is something else. Universe is an isolated and finite infinity, something akin to, and Joe, help me here, something akin to what?
Let me get my screen back up so I can read. Something akin to a time slice.
In a way, yes. A finite infinity, yes, yes.
Mm-hmm. She goes on to say, I've often thought that each of us is a clone of Source, going back to becoming who we are, Source.
Yeah. Well, that's right. And here's an interesting thing here, Judy. We never stop being where we are. So I've used the example of the candle. Big candle, light two. Two candles, light four. Four, light eight, whatever. But the original candles don't go out. So whatever you have been, maybe the whole of it, you are that even right now. The candle is burning. It's not like they get snuffed out. They might get snuffed out in consciousness a little bit. In other words, the lessening and lessening of what you think yourself is does not allow you to grasp with fullness what you really are, but it's not snuffed out. Candle's not snuffed out. You are exactly what you have descended through. You are the universe. You are the finite representation of absolute infinity. And I just want to say, only a portion, the most infinitesimal portion of absolute infinity. And you understand when I say we'll never catch up, if you measure every universe as something that's finite against the immeasurable infinity, that's the proportion you have every time a universe appears. So, you know, sometimes you see these Chinese Buddhas. They all look like they've eaten too much, and they're all laughing. Certain type of them. Other Buddhas in India, you know, they're much more serene and so forth. They know something about what is reality. And so there's a kind of a joy, even a bliss that goes into it when you begin to realize, hey, you know, this isn't his story, it's my story, mystery, mystery. This is my story. Every universe is my story. And it's only one being connected with that my. That's it. So when we say clone, in our essence, we never change being. So if that's what a clone means here, it's okay. If it's any particular form, then it's just partial. Unless it's the form of the whole finite universe, which has been presented for development. And every possible development is foreseen, but not destined in absolute infinitude. I wonder if I'm making myself clear here. Every possibility that could possibly exist is worked out in the supra universal state, but it is not known what the blinded finite consciousness will choose. And yet, if there is a choice, that choice is pre-recorded in absolute infinitude. You can get into real trouble thinking this way. And John Calvin, you know, the sort of Pope of Geneva. He was along this very heavy logical line, you know, sixth ray, fifth ray, first ray, seventh ray, not any second ray really. And he basically got into something that the Tibetan called this a damnable doctrine, where he said God decides who will be saved and who will not be saved. And he did it all by the strictest logic, according to his own understanding of what it was to think properly. So we have to be careful here when we start talking about the relationship between the absolute, the infinite, and the finite. But look, you know, those Chinese Buddhas, they're laughing for a reason. And I've said before, when Meyer Baba there in Southern California broke his silence of 30 years, he was Pisces, you know, so silence is a fish. He said, don't worry, be happy. See, he saw something, he knew something. And we have to break free of our limitations that make us miserable, because the limitations do not reveal the infinite glory of being. Okay, Judy, I hope that covers a few things. Okay, Joe or Michael or anything else that I have to deal with here?
I don't see anything.
Okay, come on, you brave ones. Are there no thoughts or questions stimulated? Is there anything? Why, you know, why am I talking about this stuff? So that we can all live better with more happiness and more joy, and eventually, like the dancing Chinese Buddhas, you know, with something bordering on the bliss. That's why I'm doing that.
You have a hand raised. One of the daring Damien.
Ah, okay. Okay, Damien, there you go.
Hi, Michael. Interesting conversation. I was just thinking what you were saying about time and space. And occasionally, I'll actually be meditating or actually practicing technique to get into the state of meditation. And a minute would feel like an hour, and an hour would feel like a minute. That'd be my understanding of time and space.
I'm sure it does add to it. You know, you're talking the language of William Blake.
Sorry, Corn.
And why is that? Infinity in a grain of sand, eternity in an hour. Mm-hmm. This is of what he spoke with all of his Sagittarian tendencies. He got something like what you're talking about, that the tiniest thing, grain of sand, is actually everything. And forever is in an hour. You know, I just thought I would mention the connection.
Yeah, it was just, I mean, years and years and years ago when I started to really get into this, I was very young. I was walking past this building in part of Dublin, and it was a healing school, and it was closed at the time. It was Christmas. So I went in the new year, and I took a few of the courses, and they had walk-in healings, you know, people would walk in and wanted to, you know, laying on hands, walking in shackles. And I was there, I was for a year, but I ended up staying there for 3.5 years. During the time when I was in there attempting to give healings, it used to happen to me quite frequently. And the people that would be on the plinth, a lot of them would turn around and at times they'd say, I felt like I was there all night. Now, you'd only have a limited time to spend with a person, right? And then other times I'd spend maybe an hour with a person and they'd get up, you'd tip them and say, okay, it's over. And they'd look at me and say, are you not going to give me a healing?
Exactly.
Yeah, and it's interesting. At the time, I actually put nothing into it. It just didn't register in my mind. And it was only years later when I started, when I'd settle my mind, and sometimes it'll happen to me, that I'd relate back to what happened at that period.
Of
what was happening. So it's just interesting when you borrow time and space.
Exactly.
You know, and I'm actually very comfortable with that.
Yeah. Well, you know, there's a certain elasticity for either one. You know, we're going to get into this business of how to compress either time or space to a dimensionless point. And, you know, it's a really weird kind of thought. I don't want to get into it right now because it's a it's a whole thing. But when you take when you realize what a point really is, sometimes we say a point in time, a point in space, and we're happy to take our pen and we go, boop, there it is. But that, you know, that's just a virtual point. That's a huge thing. That's not a dimensionless point of time or dimensionless point of space. Yeah. And when you start getting into the privation of dimension, then you really get into this reduction of time to seems like no time at all, and reduction of space. So, you know, there's no extension. There's no here and there, you know? So we're, you know, you're already in those days on that trail. And, you know, we have to discover those things. And because, look, if Master DK says, the master realizes that time and space are his playthings, it begins to remind you a little bit. I think my son knows more about Don Juan than I do. You know, the Carlos Castaneda thing. But it's just like you could manipulate time and space just the way you wanted to. If
it's
you
an,
are,
it's an amazing concept.
You know, it's really,
I think about that quite a lot. Actually, that statement myself personally, and I still find that hard to get my head around.
Yes, it's tricky, and me too. And my son was telling me, because I don't really read those books, about these so-called assemblage points. Assemblage point is pretty much what you can reconstruct your whole incarnation around, and you can move it here or there, you know? So you're not limited by space. And I haven't thought too much about how limited by time you are, but not in the usual sense. And there you are somewhere else, reconstructed around an assemblage point. So, you know, and I have a feeling that this particular magician, sorcerer, whatever you want to call him, he had a lot of seventh ray, Don Juan, whatever he was. And that there is something in his way of describing things that really points to some aspects of magic, advanced magic, in the New Age. So I'm not on the seventh ray myself, but I'm certainly interested to find out what's going on there. You know, what yeah. are they really doing? Yeah. Well, mm-hmm. it's good. Now, look, you're on the trail, Damien. You've had it from the time you're younger, and somehow it's built into you, and the way of finding yet again what you need will be made clear to you, I'm okay. sure, in time.
Interesting. Thank you. Thanks, Michael.
Thanks for your thoughts, you bet.
Michael. This illusion of time that Damien was just talking about does not occur just in meditation. If you think about when you're busy with some activity, the apparency of time just goes by so fast. And when you're not busy with something, it creeps along.
It is the sense of things, is it not? The so-called, I would call it, the relativity of the duration of temporal units according to the quality of consciousness. Something like that. You know, it depends on what we're doing.
Absolutely.
And whether we're interested. Look, suppose a person is convicted and given 10 years in jail. And most of the time is spent inside that jail cell. Well, you know, without relief of other things, there it's going to be a completely different apprehension of time than for the person who loves what they're doing and is deeply immersed in it. And they say, hey, where'd the time go? You know, very difficult for them to assess it. So, yeah, it is an apprehension. Of course, the question is, you know, how fast does time really go? And what is it really?
It gets back to what is our focus. When we focus on our personality self, it tends to slow down. When we focus on the greater life, it's an instant. Mm-hmm. We start entering into that concept called duration.
Yes. Okay. I see what you mean by that. And finally, I think it's going to be proven, if we think deeply enough, that even an instant does not really exist. Now, I know, you know, that seems preposterous given our work in the realm of Maya, but I think that we will discover in space there's no from here to there, and in time there is no travel from one moment to the next, and that yields a timeless, spaceless nothing, which is the ultimate reality. But of course, it's so different and so odd that you have to kind of dwell with it. And maybe we'll get into that if we can.
We could think of time similar to the concept of the universe having a circumference of nowhere and a center everywhere.
Yes, that is, well, I think it's Pascal you're kind of quoting, and I don't know who he's quoting. It's an ancient thought about, it goes like this, I think God is an intelligible being whose center is everywhere and whose circumference is nowhere. And of course, that's a huge That's a huge ponderable. And, you know, these, I mean, friends, look, we're getting into the abstract mind, okay? And it's a lot, as I have said, a lot different from just the complexities of the concrete mind. It's different. It has this great embracing quality to it. And maybe we will cross the point of no return and be able to manifest as the masters manifest consciously in the spiritual triad. This will be one of our goals. Now, matter of fact, if I can, you know, somehow my screen froze here a little bit here. Oh, here we go. If I was to say what we want to do, I would say, here's a picture of the Antikorana. The beginners, and of course, we better consider ourselves beginners, but the beginners are connecting the sunshine of the soul with the mental unit. If you follow Master Dikei's method of building the Antikorana, it is specific, magical, effective, using the words of power. We right now are using yet another method of completing the Antikorana. And this is, I would call it the philosophical method leading from higher mind to abstract mind and beyond. And I think the more we work together, the more you will see that that is what is happening. You do want to have an abstract mind. You do want to be able to focus your consciousness in the spiritual triad, just the way the masters can. You want an active intuition and spiritual will, and eventually you want monadic awareness in preparation for the big journey on the way of higher evolution. We've got the shambolic number right now of whoever is here, 24. Mm. Okay, friends, I'm not gonna extend it beyond this for the moment, unless there's something very, very pressing. I'll call this a day, now tomorrow morning. Tuya will be leading the Triangles Meditation. It's a broadcast at our usual YouTube broadcast. Whatever it is, link. And then Michael, no, maybe you don't have access. Or Joe, you have access. Can you put the link for the Science of Triangles tomorrow night at 6 p.m. GMT? Can you put that link
in the chat box? Yes, I'll do that. While you deal with Judy's unrelated question, she says, can someone tell me the word used by DK, which means when a master of the wisdom creates his personal body for manifestation on earth?
Maya Virupa. Maya Virupa. In other words, a body, Virupa, of Maya, constructed of the materials of the lower 18 subplanes. So it's all one word. And while Joe is doing that, I'll just type it, you know. This is it. Now, I think you can't do that before the fourth degree, and it's much more commonly done at the fifth degree. But there is a power, a Shakti, called Kriya Shakti. And it's interesting, it's ruled by Virgo, And it's on the second subplane of the cosmic physical plane. And it allows you to have a will-created body of Maya. So the day will come. In other words, and you know what's interesting here, Judy? If you look at Master Maurya, you look at Master Kutumi, they're both good-looking, and they're using Maya Virupas, modeled on what they looked like when they took the fifth initiation. That's often the way it is. The pattern is set to be modeled upon the fifth initiation body. As far as we're told thus far, Master DK is not working in a Maya Virupa, but in a quite old body. But who knows, time has passed and et cetera. The Christ, he's working in a Maya Virupa. And, you know, the kind of illusion of many people is, oh, I'm going to have a baby now, and it's going to be Jesus or the Christ or something like that. But it's not needed. As DK said, you don't have to wait for some nice child to be born into a nice family. It's Christ has his Maya Virupa already. I'm not sure what it's modeled on. It would be beyond me to know, but when he wants to reveal it, he knows the method of doing so. And remember that he is a Chohan of the sixth degree, becoming a Chohan of the seventh degree. So he's right on up there, and he has a lot of ability to make, to express by that means.
You have a follow-up question from Judy, and you have a hand from Mary Bell. Judy's follow-up question is, does Master R use a Maya Virupa as well?
You know, my impression right now is that he does not, and that he appeared as the Count in the 18th century, and the Count was really a Hungarian nobleman, and that Master R knows exactly the alchemical methods to keep a body alive and functioning at full capacity. So my impression is that all those sweet, lovely pictures you sometimes see from various groups that look like a kindergarten, you know, child's play, they're not accurate. And I'm proceeding on the assumption right now that Master R is not using a Maya Virupa, but just has the method by which he can do what he needs with that particular body. But look, if I'm wrong, it'll be revealed to me, and then I'll go on with a better hypothesis. So that's what I'm working on right now. Certainly, I think when he was the Count in the 18th century, very, very rich, you know, all the royalty was interested in him because he was so rich. A rich man has come to town. I'm pretty sure that was simply the body that had been born in Hungary to the elder Rákóczi. And then he was educated, as I understand it, by the Medicis, and then proceeded to become whatever he became, with all kinds of occult powers, and basically a master at that time. In other words, masters can have the older body. they can. Just like Master DK definitely did. What he's doing now, I don't know. Go ahead. Joe, was it Joe?
The link is in the chat box and the webinar ID, and Mary Bell's hand went down. So,
Okay. Maybe she didn't. Maybe it was just an accident.
Yes, I would assume so.
They do happen. But, you know, look, friends, take the plunge and do ask the question, do make the statement, we have nothing to do but to learn. And if I don't know something, I'm not going to pretend I do. But it will set us off on some research that could prove profitable. So don't, it's such a big subject, such an amazing subject we're dealing with, and all of the ages of wisdom and occultism is just huge. But don't be afraid to wade in, even if you say, oh, I don't know anything. Okay, well, I don't either. Wade in and you'll find out more. That's the way to go. Okay, are we good now? Is that everything? Signs of Triangles tomorrow night. Reappearance of the Christ on Thursday morning. And then on Friday, we will have Glamour in the morning and something else in the evening, I suppose. I'll figure it out. Right now, I'm a little tired and the old brain isn't working the way it should.
Friday evening would be a treatise on cosmic fire in depth.
Okay, I'll have to work on getting some depth into that, Michael. Okay, thank you. And then Saturday, Soul of Nations, and Sunday, Attracting for Hierarchical Purposes. And I just want to say, I don't know where you all are. You're scattered around the world. But please, it's a fourth-rate conference coming up. Important ray for humanity, for the hierarchy of human monads called the initiates. It's important. So if you can get yourself for any portion of the pre-conference or main conference, to Chandler, Arizona, with a beautiful little old town adjacent to it. I think that'd be wonderful. And I'd love to see you there. And I'm just working on getting myself there. So it'd be lovely to gather there in Chandler, because the hierarchy, as Tuya is always reminding me, works through events. It works through these gatherings, and the energies are taken up and rightly directed. So we provide some substance for hierarchy, and they direct it where they think they should. Okay, is there anybody on either side of the aisle that wants to say anything? Okay, let's close with our mantra of light and power. And you can, as long as you're on mute, self-mute, you can say this out loud where you are. This is coming right back down to Earth, where what will make our planet eventually a sacred planet is being called into action. The great invocation. From the point of light, within the mind of God, let light stream forth into the minds of men. Let light descend on earth. From the point of love, within the heart of God, let love stream forth into the hearts of men. May Christ return to earth. From the center where the will of God is known, let purpose guide the little wills of men, the purpose which the masters know and serve. From the center which we call the race of men, let the plan of love and light work out, and may it seal the door where evil dwells. Let light and love and power restore the plan on earth. Oh. Oh. If you can do longer ohms, just Oman. Thank you, everybody. Many blessings from the team. And hope you got something out of this. You never can tell when enlightenment will flash across the mind and or the consciousness, and you will see with clarity what you did not see before. See you soon. And to you tomorrow morning. Bye-bye.